Hey, everybody. Happy Thought Crime. We go over, was the CCP spying on us during the inauguration? We go into great detail about Seatgate from the inauguration and more. Email me, as always, freedom@charliekirk.com, and subscribe to our podcast. Open up your podcast application and type in Charlie Kirk Show. That is Charlie Kirk Show. Get involved with Turning Point USA at tpusa.com. That is tpusa.com. Buckle up, everybody. Here we go.
Charlie, what you've done is incredible here.
Maybe Charlie Kirk is on the college campus.
I want you to know we are lucky to have Charlie Kirk.
Charlie Kirk's running the White House, folks.
I want to thank Charlie. He's an incredible guy. His spirit, his love of this country. He's done an amazing job building one of the most powerful youth organizations ever created, Turning Point USA.
We will not embrace the ideas that have destroyed countries, destroyed lives, and we are going to fight for freedom on campuses across the country. That's why we are here.
Noble Gold Investments is the official gold sponsor of the Charlie Kirk Show, a company that specializes in gold IRAs and physical delivery of precious metals. Learn how you could protect your wealth with Noble Gold Investments at NobleGoldInvestments.com. That is NobleGoldInvestments.com. It's where I buy all of my gold. Go to NobleGoldInvestments.com. Okay, everybody. It is Thought Crime Thursday, live from the Imperial Capitol. Can we get the wide shot going here? Can we just go wide?
Yo, look at this.
Is that not the greatest looking thing you've ever seen?
Charlie, is it DCTC? It's like a DCTC.
It's a DCTC. That's right.
DCTC. Oh,
wow. So is there only one remote guest? Is it Blake?
It's Blake.
Yeah. Why did Blake leave?
You can't escape me. No one told me to stay. I was only booked through
Blake,
Tuesday.
I specifically said, let's all do thought crime in D.C.
Yeah, you said and it. Then, yeah, you said
and
it
then,
yesterday.
And then, I'm like, hey, where are you, Blake? And you're like, oh, I flew back to Phoenix. So
it is great to see you all. We are here live from D.C. So much to recap and go over. I really want to spend time to kind of go through inauguration weekend before we even get into some of the substance of all the executive orders and everything that we've gone through. What is the best way to start this conversation, Jack? I know that there's some prompting here, but can I think the other one is
Charlie Kirk is
Seatgate too, right?
Charlie Kirk is very naughty. Charlie Kirk is very bad. How dare Charlie Kirk be allowed?
Oh, that's funny. No, I know which
a
one
place
you're on. Yeah.
of honor in the inauguration, in the inaugural hall, or you know, whatever we're calling the Capitol Rotunda from the day of. Because this became the big sort of talk of the, you know, the whisper talk of D.C. Mm-hmm. Everybody knows the way Washington, D.C., and it is a very historic kind of, kind of discussion as to, you know, so who is seated closest to the king? You know, your proximity is power, et cetera, which is true. This is actually true. But there was a lot of chatter that certain House Republicans were very, very upset that Charlie Kirk, who isn't even an elected member of Congress, got to sit
in the rotunda
in a better seat.
Not just Charlie Kirk plus wife.
Charlie Kirk plus wife. How dare we? How dare we?
Let's show some of these pictures.
We're allowed to sit closer than some of them.
So, obviously, we know that the outdoor service ceremony was canceled. By the way, right decision. Would you agree, Andrew?
I tell you what. I think it was absolutely 100%, 1,000% the right decision. But, Charlie, you're bringing up another sort of controversy. Was it because of the weather or were there other concerns? And so I just want to flag that in case we want to go back to it, because I would like to.
Well, but no, I'm just saying that if you even walked outside in the cold, the wind, people would have died.
No, like, people do not appreciate how bone-chillingly cold it is in D.C.
Now, for me,
right
a Chicagoan, I was like, okay, just wear more clothing. But you don't understand. There's people from all across the country that are coming in that'll drive in from Georgia and South Carolina that are not used to this. Some old person would have died. Donald Trump saved lives before he was even in office. So it got moved into the Capitol Rotunda. It was actually my first time ever in the Rotunda, believe it or not. I've done the Capitol thing.
Wait, what?
Yeah, I've
Wait,
never been in the
really?
Rotunda.
You've never been in the Capitol Rotunda?
Never?
Yeah, I've been in the Capitol. I was in the area where the State of the Union is administered, the House chamber.
Right.
I've been in the Senate chamber, but never the Rotunda.
But that's like you walk in.
Well,
the rotunda.
Never done the tourist thing? Seeing
so,
the paintings?
So I have to give a little inside baseball here. I got to do a tour in which Speaker Johnson, I know, we like him, okay, ish. All right, he's doing some good stuff. He gave us a private tour.
Andrew's going to get so much hate mail.
I know. I'm going to get
freedom hate. At charliekirk.com.
Let me have it. I got an opportunity to do a private tour, and then Speaker Johnson addressed the tour. Okay. And they actually took us inside the area where they were setting up the luncheon and where they were going to do the actual swearing in. And I got to see the rotunda and all that stuff. So I wasn't like Charlie exclusive by any means, but it was very, very cool. And I will tell you, Charlie, you had this experience, I'm sure, as well. It's way smaller in person. That whole space is way smaller in person than it appears on TV.
The rotunda?
It's super small.
Yeah. It's extremely
small.
Tight.
Yeah.
And so there was kind of the war over ticketing. So let's kind of show the picture of the rotunda from the interior. So as things got announced, there was a nonstop fight from donors, influencers, elected officials of who actually gets in the rotunda. Now, this is very complicated because the Presidential Inaugural Committee, otherwise known as JSIC, does not control all the tickets. It is a joint committee between the Senate, the House, and the incoming administration. So as soon as you decide to go in the rotunda, you are 100% in Article I land within the House and the Senate. So therefore, if you look at the picture, before you even get to like, you know, some of Trump's friends outside of the dais, and I'll get to the dais in a second, it's all senators.
Yeah.
So the senators hogged all of the tickets up front.
You're in controlled territory there. They
so
control that.
So just put this in perspective, there were about 680 seats in the rotunda. About 400 of them were for Congress. So there was only 230 tickets allocated for Trump and his team, family, and even some select donors. So that huge war over actually who gets ticketing. There was an overflow room where people like Theo Von were and Logan Paul and Megyn Kelly and all the governors. All the governors were in the overflow room, right? So super honored, and thank you to Susie, and thank you to everyone who worked so hard on this for approving not just myself but also Erica. Big, big lift, and that's a big deal, right?
No. It was a huge honor, and actually it was a huge honor for all of us that work fact that we had a literal seat at the table via you was huge. And by the way, not just us, all the grassroots, all the activists, it was a testament to how hard we've all worked and how hard the team has worked. Turning Point Action, Turning Point USA. I mean, it really was a huge honor for the grassroots.
I was so touched to be able to just be included. In fact, there was no difference between how you entered. I entered alongside of Ketanji Brown Jackson, Brett Kavanaugh, Clarence Thomas. The whole Supreme Court walked in as I walked in. Literally, like we were just kind of walking in together. There was no guard. There was no, I mean, it was just all kind of one line as you enter into the, like from outside into the Capitol. By the way, I need to tell my CCP story. Okay. It's an exclusive story I haven't told, which actually plays into this morning, but okay.
Have you debriefed this yet with our, I guess we don't have any national security confirmed.
No,
I
have told Mike Waltz about this. It's a very serious issue.
Okay.
So I'll get to the CCP story later in the program because it's worth it. But anyway, honored to have been included. And so I started to get text messages while I'm sitting in there that this woman tweeted saying that some anonymous Republican lawmaker was mad that I had better tickets than them. Now, mind you, Eric Swalwell was literally right behind me. Now, I think I deserve great praise because I went through High Road Virality, High Road Virality. I said, here we are at a presidential inauguration. And I wanted so badly, when it was over, to take out my phone and say, hey, Congressman Swalwell, are you accepting the pardon? Are you accepting the pardon? Because he was on the J6 committee. I decided not to do it.
See, I had the same situation, although it was with other Republicans when we were at the ball. And I was like, you know, this would really go viral with a certain, I don't know, maybe congresswoman from South Carolina or certain other conservative talkers but you know, I was like, you know what? It's a day for unity. It's a day for the president. It's not a day for that. It's not a day for that, right, Charlie?
It wasn't a day for that. Let's put 155 up on screen. Here were these lunatics, Brad Schneider, I don't know who these other people, Eric Swalwell. That was when Donald Trump said, and God save my life, and all the Democrats were sitting. It turned into a mini State of the Union vibe where like half the room would stand and applaud and half the room would kind of sit. But it was because of the rotunda, the noise echoes and actually had a really good energy to it.
Well, on TV,
how did it feel?
On TV, it played like a massive applause line where he said, "I've, you know, became convinced that God saved my life to make America great again." It was a huge moment, like chills moment. And so when you sent that picture, I mean, I was getting like live feedback. I saw the picture in our chat. I was like, and like, you know, you're like, we're getting this up. I was like, okay, you know, like, and I think it did like almost 2 million engagements. Oh, yeah. Like people saw that picture.
By the way, after it, about 5 minutes after, Swallowed would stand up for almost every applause line. I think some staffer texted him like, "Charlie Kirk is roasting you, stand up." And it was hilarious to kind of see as it was happening. I loved watching and looking at Obama and Hillary. That's a separate.
Okay. No, but that dynamic of the speech, I mean, Jack, I think you would agree, was what made this not only a historic moment, because we can all feel that the country is on the verge and in the midst of something truly transformational in a positive sense, but the context, doing all of that, the salt in the wound, as Joe Biden and Barack Obama.
And mind you, we knew that Joe Biden just pardoned his family, but
Trump
did not. That's what's so remarkable.
But it was this incredible juxtaposition of seeing essentially the hegemonic force and power structure of the previous regimes right there having to swallow these very harsh words.
It was a regime change.
It was a regime change.
That's what it was, yeah.
And it was incredibly powerful. And a different politician would have used that moment and softened his language, pulled his punches. Trump pulled no punches. Trump, I mean, maybe a little bit. He likes to say that Melania took out a couple of the, like, you know, paragraphs that were a little bit stronger. It was strong as it was. And to see Joe Biden have to sit there and listen to it, Barack Obama, Hillary and Bill Clinton, and the whole George Bush, it was a really incredible. I think one of the truly historic pictures, just from an optics standpoint, that we will ever live to witness. And to see it in such a tight frame too. Again, on TV, you do not understand how tight of a space that is. I mean, these guys are breathing down each other's necks inside that space.
Charlie, what had you ever been that close to Obama and Hillary before?
No, I actually had never seen.
What was that like?
Obama in person.
What was that like?
It was something. I mean, it's hard to kind of put in words. They just look different but similar in person, I guess, is the way you could say. And I mean, Hillary just is such a disgusting person. And then seeing George, I've met George W. Bush before, but you have to look at it. That ensemble of people will never happen again. It'll never happen.
Never. No.
Like that particular ensemble of people will never be recreated.
And no Michelle. I don't know. I don't know what's going on there. No.
Some Jennifer Aniston would have some
trouble in paradise.
Okay, strange story. All right. So not to go into too much detail, my wife came with me on this trip, and her friend made dinner reservations for us. And so on the Saturday night before inauguration, I was at a restaurant in D.C. And all of a sudden, like, I would say half, because this whole town has been pretty magnified during inauguration, right? I mean, just pure numbers.
Total takeover.
Yeah, I mean, it's
total
like, it's got to be 60-40
conservative. No resistance.
And, yeah, and there's very little protest. Nope. I haven't seen a single protest. Jack, you had to go hunting for them. Anyways, the point is, all of a sudden, half the it was muted. Starts clapping, and you hear one woman cheer. And it was Barack Obama eating at the same restaurant as me, like whizzes by. I feel the air behind my head, and I'm like trying to figure out why people are cheering. And then my wife's friend goes, "Barack Obama just like exited." So I turn, and I never even saw the guy. I just felt the air pass me, heard the cheers, and apparently he whizzed right back past me. It was a very DC moment, I will say.
And so all that to say, I got attacked for having good seats, but it wasn't just me. It was also Erica, and they were really sweet to include her because all the other congressional spouses, this is what made them really mad, all the congressional spouses were in the overflow room. So the congressional spouses were in the overflow room, and Erica got in, and she deserves it because we were all part of this kind of historic and triumphant moment. And it was just larger than life, breathtaking, and yeah, that seat gate where a lot of, and then Jim Banks, Senator Jim Banks,
we walked through that as well. We have this tweet. So let's go.
Well, actually, I just saw Senator Jim Banks like 5 minutes
before
this program.
Jim Banks is part of this new guard that you've been talking about that really has it. Okay, throw up 166. I know you had it before. But so this is Julia Grace Brufke. And Julia Grace is a senior Washington reporter, sort of known. She's with the Daily Beast. She's fine. Everything's fine. She's actually used to work at the Washington Examiner, believe it or not. So she says, Charlie Kirk has better seats than every member of Congress. Tells you how little Trump team thinks of Congress, one GOP lawmaker tells me. Then, let's go to 167, Jim Banks chimes in and says, Charlie Kirk has done more than most members of Congress combined to get us to this point today, which was, I thought, a really nice thing for Jim Banks to sort of say.
Organically, I didn't ask him to do
that. Yeah, and you retweeted it because I thought it was a great point, and you thought it was a great point, and good for Jim Banks. And I would say Jim Banks is a really good barometer of when we get into confirmation talks, when we get into how do we get the president's agenda across the finish line. Jim Banks is a perfect embodiment of this new guard, Bernie Moreno.
I just saw Bernie too.
These guys are having dinner together. No, these guys are get it done guys. These guys are totally on the team. They're not this vestige of the past of a bygone Republican Party that, you know, nobody's just, you know, taking the time to raise $50 million to primary, right? So, but these guys are with it, and Jim's totally on the team, and I love that he did that for you. But let's show a picture of your seating location, Charlie. 164. Let's go ahead. We dropped an arrow.
Now, if you think they were mad, just to be clear, if the original dais would have stood, the tickets would have been even better. Meaning that because of all the Capitol mix-up and the House and the
Senate.
You mean
had it been outside?
Had it been outside, I would have been two or three rows back from the people that were on the dais with Trump inside.
I don't know if I understand what you
said. So, like, for example, where Elon was and where the cabinet was.
You would have been three rows behind
him. I would have been, like, in that group.
Oh, wow.
If it would have been outside. And so...
That's amazing.
Yeah, heads would have really exploded. But because it went inside... It was like, hey, I really want Erica there. It was kind of some like horse training.
Yeah, sure.
And I just like, I want to be in the room. I don't care if I have a terrible ticket. And
well, apparently it wasn't terrible enough.
No, I'm not saying it was terrible. No,
I'm
saying that was actually awesome. I saw everything.
I love that Swalwell was behind you.
No, I was super honored, and it was just treated so well. And again, it was just kind of blown away because last inauguration, I was like looking up in the cheap seats. I was like, oh, hi, I see a little dot.
Yeah, you know? Exactly. Well, I mean, it's a whole new day in Washington. I will tell you, little vibe check on the ground, Jack. You could be good on this. I just feel like this city, even in Trump 1.0, in the first term, I don't feel at all conspicuous being loud and proud with what I'm thinking. I don't hold back opinions at the like restaurant or like at coffee. I'm out and proud, and I don't even.
It's like the resistance is quiet.
I worry if that's a
false sense of security because
it's totally possible.
This town is still this town. All right. You know, the cockroaches are dug
deep.
But
the vermin are on the run.
They're very, yeah.
We're getting a lot of them fired. A lot of them are on notice. A lot of them know that they are probably, you know, listen. The president
this town's
has
been
every
around
right
a lot
get,
longer than any of the three
I totally
of us.
Agree. I totally agree. And but they legitimately do feel threatened for their future, and they're not going to pop their head up just yet.
They
I
mean, are, and that's
best,
why. So they're
best
all
because they don't know where to fight.
Yeah, they're all turtling right now. Mm-hmm. They're sort of waiting. They're sort of in, you know, kind of in like receive mode. Okay. What do I do? How do I hunker down? How do I, you know, let's leak some stuff on Hegseth. Let's leak some stuff on Tulsi. Let's, you know, see if we can get that going there. Get, you know, Murkowski Collins came out. You know, is McConnell going to vote? Who knows? Whatever. Is JD going to have to come back to town to be the tiebreaker? Whatever. Point being is it's a muted response, far muted. Obviously, you're not seeing the Antifa riots like we saw in 2017, the limos burning, the attack on the deplorable, et cetera, et cetera. That said, I'm just saying, guys, we haven't quite,
stay
you
frosty.
Know, stay frosty.
Hey, everybody, Charlie Kirk here with New Year's resolutions. Many of us will vow to eat healthier, and that's a good thing. But what about your beloved pets and their nutrition? Naturopathic Dr. Dennis Black is on a mission to provide better nutrition for cats and dogs because, truthfully, it's not what you are feeding your pet, it's what you are not. Which is why he created Rough Greens and Meow Greens in the first place. Bring their dead food back to life with live vitamins, minerals, probiotics, enzymes, omega oils, antioxidants, and so much more. All in their tasty formula your dog or cat will love. Improve your pet's coat, digestion, and energy, and have less vet bills. Let 2025 bring a new year and a new pet. Try it. Get a Jumpstart trial bag, normally $20, free with promo code Charlie. Just cover shipping. Resolve to provide what your pet's food has been missing with RUFF Greens. To get your free Jumpstart trial bag, go to roughgreens.com. Use promo code Charlie. So good, your pet will ask for it by name. Roughgreens.com/Charlie.
Just the fact that we're even this far is just such a dramatic, dramatic shift. And you look at President Trump's approval ratings. I mean, he's above water right now.
Which some is, polls which have is him why they're scared far above of water. Really coming out. And really also why, and, you know, I know we're kind of changing the conversation a little bit, but it's why, and Charlie, I'd love to get your thoughts on this. The flood the zone strategy has been brilliant. I don't think they should let up.
Yeah, no.
I think that it's been so successful that the longer you wait to do things, the more time it's going to give this town, the media, the left, right, whatever you want to call it, the deep state staters, time to respond. But if you're firing on all pistons, if you are doing the full court press, they don't have time to respond because there's too many things coming down the pipe at once. The minute you slow up, that's what gives them time to get their ducks in a row and get a response off.
No, look, I think you have to continue to flood the zone. And by the way, this is happening in multiple volleys. There's a reason why it's day one, day two, day three. You can't keep up with it. I mean, today was JFK files. Yesterday was affirmative action. Day before that was January 6th. I mean, those are three monumental things. Yeah, and the pro-lifers. So where do they even focus their media attention? Understand, the media is largely the life force and the signal for where a lot of these people end up fighting. Now, they're going to try to stop some of the stuff in the courts, but pardon power is absolute. They can't challenge that. So that's happening. January 6th is absolute. The affirmative action EO is just rescinding another EO. So the DEI stuff is completely within the power and the authority of the current president. But also understand that so much of this, the next wave is Pete Hegseth.
Mm-hmm.
The next wave after that is going to be Pam Bondi.
Wait until
Cash Patel and Pam Bondi can go, we want a review of all cases over the last 8 years. We want to know what's pending, current investigations, people you're looking into, you know, subpoenas, and they have to go look into all the active case files. I mean, that's going to be a whole nother wave.
The FISA warrants.
Well, that's, yeah, exactly. And
they're
that's why
see
we need
Tulsi. Who's got active FISA warrants out correct. On them. Yes. Tulsi's going to be instrumental in that and making sure that gets across. So who that's are right. they looking at right now? Who was there? And this is something that I'm even still waiting to hear. Was there a Carter Page of 2024 or a George correct. Papadopoulos, mm-hmm. someone that they used to go mm-hmm. after to say, unsuccessfully in terms of infiltration, but successfully in terms of getting a FISA warrant against them. Correct. I don't know, but I'm just saying I'm looking at the past track record. I'm noticing a pattern. This is basic pattern recognition. This is thought crime after all. And we're saying, look, I don't trust these guys. I don't trust these guys for 1 second. And not to mention just the very basic stuff about what does the FBI actually know about Thomas Matthew Crooks or Ryan Wesley Routh, ooh. The people who tried to kill President Trump? Were they yeah. really just lone wolves running around on their own and whoopsie daisy were able to slip through Secret Service? Let's actually get the receipts on that.
Andrew, a thought?
No, I just, you know, it's funny. You brought up the assassination attempts. You bring up drones, like all of these huge stories. And we don't know the half of it. And it's a reminder, like with this blitzkrieg that we're all living through, this flooding the zone.
Well, careful there, Elon.
Awesome. Which is awesome.
I yeah, use that on my show every day.
Yeah.
Media Matters hasn't written it up yet.
So here's what I'll say, though, is that there is a possibility that we forget to review the important stuff, right? That we forget to, like, by the way, another thing I want to find out about, Jack, Las Vegas shooting.
Uh-oh.
You know what
uh-oh.
I mean? Like, so these uh-oh. Things that have been hidden from public view and we don't really have an insight on it, I'm excited to get into it, and I think there's a real possibility. And it's but there's just so much news that it's even hard to keep your eye on
them. I want to get Blake in here. Blake, I want you to walk through some of these executive orders. By the way, there are some delightful EOs that did not get any attention.
That's what's great.
For example, did you know that there was an EO signed on the first day putting people over fish? No, it's actually on the White House website.
Oh, Trump's obsessed with
stopping
the Delta smelt.
Radical environmentalism to provide water to Southern California. The title of the EO is putting people over fish.
Okay, 1 second before we go to Blake here. Charlie, I'll never forget the first time you introduced me to President Trump. He goes, "Where do you live?" And I mentioned California. And President Trump goes into a whole like diatribe. This is like probably 2018, 2019, something like that, Charlie. It goes into a whole diatribe about the Delta smelt.
Mm-hmm.
Instantly, as soon as he hears the word California, the guy goes, Delta smelt, water. This is deep within President Trump's subconscious. Well, it's pretty conscious now.
All right, so Blake, walk through some of your favorite EOs and the profundity of the affirmative action.
All right, and all you listening, we have several thousand people here on Rumble Live. Send us chats if you want us to highlight an underrated favorite of yours, because we'd love to hear what you all think. Because it really is crazy, Charlie. I've been looking through what it was, and as we discussed, as you discussed on the show the other day, it was in your book. There was a chapter in your book that was this like kind of fantasia when we have the next Republican president, and it's saying like day one, just imagine a Republican president who drops this order and that order and that order, and they just have dozens of them by the end of the day, and Washington is bowled over because you're not supposed to do things that fast. And that's actually what they did. It's amazing. It was genuinely extremely exciting to watch, not even being inside the room like you were. But let's think. So obviously the big headline item was pardoning all the J6ers right away. And what was so brilliant about that was he gets it out there right away. That's all CNN. They're hyperventilating. That's all they can talk about. That's all MSNBC can talk about. It's quite a bit of what they're talking about at the newspapers. And while he's doing that, he's dropping, okay, we're getting rid of the pride flags at all the embassies and federal buildings. You just wave the American flag. You don't need that second national flag they invented. We're shutting down all the DEI people. We're putting them all on furlough. We're shutting down all those offices. We're going to get rid of them. The craziest one to me, this was my personal favorite, was this was two nights ago, Tuesday night, like 9 p.m., they announce via Chris Rufo that President Trump has signed this, that he's repealing the executive order from LBJ's administration. I believe it's 11246. It's the executive order that basically created the modern like racial racket, like the affirmative action racket, where it was supposed to say don't discriminate. And as Washington loves to do, the courts went and they interpreted this to it is mandatory that you discriminate against people. And this order repeals that and also says, by the way, we now actually interpret the Civil Rights Act to do what it says it does, which is that discrimination's illegal. So if you get a contract with the federal government, can't do it. If you're getting a federal grant, like if you're a university, can't do it. This is one of the most important orders any Republican president has done in our lifetimes on anything. This could be absolutely monumental. And what's amazing about it, Charlie, is it was not the lead story on CNN when it dropped. It was not the lead story in the New York Times when it dropped because they were too busy covering J6, covering the furloughing the DEI people, covering confirmation hearings. They were too busy to put any focus on it. And that's what's really been so amazing with the first few days of the Trump administration. It is shock and awe applied to politics. I went and I looked it up. Barack Obama had, I think, 19 executive orders on his first 100 days. No, it was 32 executive orders. I can't remember the exact number. Whatever it was, he had some number of executive orders in his first 100 days, and President Trump beat it in about 12 hours.
Whoa.
Amazing. Remarkable.
The great Will Scharf, by the way. Yeah. Taking care of the executive orders, running that on the desk. It was awesome to see him at the Capital One
Will
Arena
Scharf
and then in the Oval.
Legitimately,
so everyone knows. Here's a trivia question Blake might know. Who in American history has had Will Sharpe's job before? White House Staff Secretary.
Kavanaugh.
That's true. Well done. That is right. 10 points to Jack Posobiec. The White House Staff Secretary.
Off the dome, baby.
The White House Staff Secretary, on the surface, seems as if it's like a perfunctory job. It says, controls the paper flow to the president. That is the central nervous system of the entire federal
They control
government.
All the paper.
Well, so you think, okay, what is it, like newspapers? No. Anything the president needs to review or sign, from a national security briefing to an executive order to a memo from a foreign leader, comes through the White House Staff Secretary office. And if there is a comma wrong, if there is an apostrophe wrong, if there is a number where it's like, well, is it executive order 1138 or is it executive order 1139? It could be the difference between, you know, pardoning somebody for something that you meant or didn't mean. So the White House Staff Secretary, Will Sharpe, is doing better. Amazing. One of my personal favorites. First of all, I want to read some of these executive orders. We're going to do this on the show because I think we have to go through some of these because they haven't gotten the attention that they deserve.
Yes.
This one, restoring names that honor American greatness. So obviously, you know, there's the, you know, Gulf of America, all that, which I love. But you go deeper, it's the he's just taking over the entire naming commission to review every single name of like national parks and rivers to make sure that they reflect American greatness. I think it's amazing.
You should lobby him. Bring back the old base names. We got to get those back.
Oh, I have a high degree of certainty he's going to allow Pete Hegseth to get a victory lap on that one.
Base names are coming back.
Yeah, you know, that one is good.
Yeah, while we're at it, we should change Beijing back to Peking. China would never recover from that one.
You know, you're talking about the imperial capital feeling muted, Jack. Look at it. On day one, there was an order to review all potential. Oh, wait, hold on. Never mind. It was basically reclassifying members of the federal civil servants so they are easier to fire and replace, especially if they hinder or sabotage the administration's agenda. So, like, they see all these executive orders coming through. They've heard the rumors about Schedule F. I mean, right? So they're ducking for cover.
What do you think all the diversity czars are doing right now? Do you think they're thinking of us? Do you think they're having a good night?
Putting their resumes out.
We didn't even mention it yet. The order for all of the federal workers to go back to work. That was great when he issued it. It's now amazing because I'm finding the federal workers who are whining on the internet. You can go on that, you know, giant volcano of soy that is Reddit. And, of course, they have a federal workers subreddit. And they were complaining.
Oh, I saw this earlier.
Yeah, they were saying, it's all they'll talk about. They're all freaking out. And, like, the top thread when I looked at it, I think we posted this on Twitter. They were freaking out where they're saying, we have to fight back by, we have to boycott every small business near our office. Don't go to the restaurants. Don't go to the gas stations. Don't shop at the grocery stores. It's such a perfect symbol that they're so angry about having to go to the office that they want to take it out on small businesses staffed by employees who actually have to go to work for their jobs, who actually do real work every day. And they want to lash out at them to show how angry they are that they have to go into the office like a normal person because they're such disgraceful and like resentful and pathetic people. And then they're also whining. They were whining below your tweet, Charlie, where they were saying, we could make infinite money in the private sector, but instead they're just self-sacrificially working for the federal government. I think when they start quitting, which is one of the reasons we're making them all go back to the office, some of the losers will quit. I think they will be quite surprised how in demand their skills are or how not in demand some of them are.
They couldn't make endless money, for the record, most of these people. Now, the ones that could, maybe they will, and this will be the best thing that ever happened to them. But the vast majority of them, you know, and Blake, I think you pointed this out. A lot of these people have like side jobs and secondary jobs, and they basically been fleecing off the government.
I'm working on this.
I'm just going to say this. When I was in the intel community, I was at Navy Intelligence, and there was a girl who ran like a baking company out of her cubicle at Navy Intelligence, and she would be on the phone, like conducted, like she sold like cookies and macaroons and stuff, and she would just be on the phone doing orders while she was on the clock on the government dime.
A friend of mine told me today he has a person he knows, I believe at FAA, who is a realtor on the side, and his official government phone number connects you directly to the voicemail of his real estate side business.
Yeah, yeah, that sounds about right. It's the whole government is full of scams like this. Absolutely full.
The amount of executive action, let's just talk about this, Blake, even for some of the skeptics, I'm sure, Blake, that you know. And Blake is, you know, what is it? Good Trump, bad Trump, fair
contrarian.
Weather Blake.
He can be contrarian.
He can be contrarian. Blake,
is Black Bill Blake returning?
Blake, no, he's you been red be pilled.
He was dormant through the election, but now.
Blake, there's some good stuff here. You got to be honest.
No, I was just raving about it for like 5 minutes straight, Charlie. No, I am.
No, I know. I just want to talk more broadly, though. Yes, of course.
Yeah, I'm very excited. I would urge everyone to remember, as we were saying before we even got into the list, an executive order doesn't make reality by itself. One of the things we did day one was the EO on birthright citizenship. They're saying you don't get birthright citizenship if you're an illegal, if you're a tourist, or even they're going pretty aggressive. They're saying even if you're certain types of temporary legal resident, like guest workers, you don't benefit from it. And that's already been put on hold. A federal judge shot that down right away. And we might lose that. We might go all the way to the Supreme Court on that and lose. I'll be frank. We don't change reality with just an executive order. But the level of aggression is great. It keeps everyone off balance. We're going to get wins on at least many of these things. And because they're coming out so quickly, you maximize their value over the course of an administration. Like, the order on the DEI stuff, it's going to be really hard to disassemble that apparatus, but you're going to get rid of way more of it when you're doing it for 1,400 days than if this came out in year two, in year three. At that point, to get anything out of it, you got to win the next election. Even if we, heaven forfend, lose the next election, we'll be able to have a ton of impact because we got going on all the important stuff right away.
Hey, everybody, Charlie Kirk here. Brand new year, brand new opportunities to change the world for the better. It's easier than you might think. You can save babies by providing ultrasounds with Preborn. Together with the Sanctity of Human Life Month, we're going to save 35,000 babies to show the world that not only do we believe life is precious, but we're going to do something about it. Your gift of Preborn will give a girl the truth about what's happening in her body so that she can make the right choice. What better way to start this new year than to join us to save babies? And $28 a month will save a baby a month all year long. A $15,000 gift will provide a complete ultrasound machine that will save thousands of babies for years and years to come. And will also save moms from a lifetime of pain and regret. I am a donor to this organization, and you should be too. Start this new year by being a hero for life. Call 833-850-2229 or click on the Preborn banner at charliekirk.com. That is charliekirk.com, and click on the Preborn banner. I'm a donor. You should be too. CharlieKirk.com Preborn banner.
Okay.
And it's also just some of the little stuff. I mean, that might not make a make a big difference. You know, I was walking through the White House in the Eisenhower Executive Office Building, and just taking down. I saw people taking down all the signs that say like gender neutral restrooms, or taking down the mask signs. Now there was one that I do have to make sure that the new Secret Service director addresses. There was a Secret Service guy that was processing me today at the White House, and he had not just a gay pride flag. He had, like, the trans inverted flag on his vest, Jack, on his Secret Service vest.
Yeah, and that's political.
At the White House.
And by the way, that's political.
So do you want to hear something? This might sound a little bit prideful, but I think you guys will cut me slack for not prideful. But typically when I am around police officers, muscular class, National Guard, I get recognized, and there's like some, like at least some favor. I'd say one, at least half, right?
I know what you mean.
Especially working
politics,
right? No, you can see where I'm going here, though. So I go into the White House Secret Service, and I get like stone cold response.
Yep.
Not one, like 5, 10, 15, 20. When I do a Secret Service event, like they're always coming up to me in the
right. They're always like,
what I'm going is that Biden and Kamala, they staff the White House with like loyalists. Like, regime. Now, there were some people that came up the cafeteria. Okay, yeah, you're great. Well, you know, as I was visiting. But it was really interesting. It was very illuminating. There was a big lot.
You were getting the hairy eye. Eyeball.
Yeah. No, like, I was like, geez, okay.
Yeah.
Because I was expecting, like, oh, you know, welcome back. No, the guy's, he's checking me in. He's got the trans flag. Like, trans flag. It's not just the gay flag. It's the gay one with the
triangle.
But you could tell the vibe was off, though.
Oh, no, I could totally tell the vibe was off. It was like not even eye contact.
Yeah.
But then again, some of the Secret Service guys that might have slipped through the cracks were like, we love you, fist bump, you know. Interestingly, the Hispanic and the black guys were the ones that were the most
Oh, can we just dispel
pro-MAGA,
this? Can we just
most
dispel
pro-MAGA,
this?
And it was the...
Charlie, I've been with you at more events than probably most, and
okay,
I would...
It's not about Charlie
No,
Kirk.
But hold on, hold on.
Government, right?
I would just say that you get fist bumps from black and brown,
oh,
like,
totally.
Dudes more than just about anything, which is a hilarious thing. But, yeah, I mean, go ahead. I don't want to take – this is an important point you're making because we do have to sort of restock the shelves, restaff the these key loyalist positions with people that love Trump. I mean, it's just – it's absolutely a mandatory thing at this point. So,
yeah,
continue.
No, and so, look, and Trump's going to clean all this up, and his team's cleaning it all up. It's just illuminating to see what the prior regime has done up until this moment, right?
But it's sort of like when they – what was Obama?
It's like when the Soviet Union fell.
Who took the W's out of the – was that Clinton took the W's out of the keyboards?
That was Obama.
Was it Obama?
Or,
no, it was Clinton because the W was coming after him and they took all the W's out
right,
of the keyboards.
Yeah, right.
It's like little things like that, but this is a little more important when it's people that are tasked with
– I mean, it's important, but you know, it's like a little pin. Like, okay, it's not like world-changing stuff, but it is emblematic of likely
100%.
You know, a larger issue that needs to be addressed. So I'm just looking through the executive action and orders here. You got to give credit for Trump's boldness. And I mean, I laugh because he does this every day, right? It's going to be an SNL routine at some point in a good way.
Oh, for sure.
It's going to be, Will Sharp comes up. Sir, we have an executive order to
colonize Mars.
Exactly. To colonize Mars. Oh, that's a big one.
Yeah.
That's a big one.
People have been waiting years, decades for this. Yeah. It totally is a skit.
Shows it up, right? Sir. We have an executive order to claim Greenland as part of America. Ooh, that's a big one.
But to Blake's earlier point, how many of these things are so dramatic, so sweeping that they would have dominated previous news cycles? I want to go back to this birthright citizenship. There is zero arguments that I have ever heard that make me convinced that the 14th Amendment was for anybody but slaves and maybe arguably American Indians.
Build it out because media
actually,
matters.
It's not.
No, well, what?
I can talk more, but it's specifically not about Native Americans.
Well, I know this is what I'm getting at. They actually had to – okay, so this is part of my point.
Okay.
So there's a guy named Senator Jacob Howard. He was a senator at the time when they were passing the 14th Amendment. And they're arguing on the Senate floor. And
he's
contended that it should be construed to mean – so this is back to that clause that everybody likes to talk about, subject to the jurisdiction thereof. Now, Senator Jacob Howard said it should be construed to mean a full and complete jurisdiction, like the same jurisdiction in extent and quality as applies to every citizen of the United States now. And so why this is important is because that construct meant that American Indians would not be granted citizenship because they were loyal to another sovereign, namely the tribal powers, right? They were part of their
tribal nations.
Tribal nations. So they actually had to Senator James Doolittle of Wisconsin added a provision, an amendment that had to add languages Indians not taxed. So this is how obvious it would have been to the writers of the 14th Amendment that, of course, this was not meant to be gamed by foreigners that just, you know, come over 9 months pregnant and have a baby on this side of the border, and they get rewarded for that act of heroism. No, they literally had to carve out Native Americans because they were born in the continental United States to make sure that they were also included in this provision, in the amendment. So this whole thing, I remember you posted it the day it happened. It was news, this ending of birthright citizenship for illegals. And, you know, sure enough, everybody's like, well, it's in the Constitution. You can't just, like, change it with an executive order. It's like, hold on. This has been such a bastard, and Blake, you would probably know more than I would on the how many different ways the 14th Amendment has led to terrible readings of the Constitution. It's one of the touch points of constitutional law that just seems to always come back around and get interpreted in the most awful way. But absolutely, the 14th Amendment was not meant to reward people who break into your country.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. Like, what it is the Supreme Court decision that does is very old. It was United States versus Wong Kim Ark was the name of it. Wong Kim Ark was a man of Chinese descent. His parents were Chinese immigrants who came to the United States. And the ruling in that case was, okay, his parents were permanent residents of the United States. They had him. And he, so even though they themselves had been citizens and subjects of China, since they were legally living in America, he was a U.S. citizen. At best, you can just say that that codifies the interpretation that legal residents of the United States, their kids have birthright citizenship. But it's like, just take a, basically the bureaucracy in Washington just made the grab and said, yeah, actually illegal immigrants also count for this. And also people who come here on tourist visas who are like here on very temporary residency or not, or just travelers, they also count. We're just going to make that grab. And then you have all these constitutional experts going around and saying, this is super decided. It's super clear cut. They're liars. It's disgusting. And
well,
we're going to go to the Supreme Court.
You want to know that? Yeah, 100%. We'll see how Amy Coney Barrett rules on it. We'll see what happens with that. But I think they're going to be victorious, because to me, there's a very logical reading of the 14th Amendment. You want to know the dirty truth about the 14th Amendment? Birthright citizenship was a scheme that was enacted in order to displace native peoples by colonialist powers. So they would come and move in, you know, so the Spanish would come in and they would create birthright citizenship in order to displace native peoples. Well, as Americans, we're all the native peoples of this land now. And it's, you know, it's being brought back around and being used against Americans. So it's a whole, the whole topic I'm very passionate about, as you might tell. But it's what's crazy, again, to make the point, this would be front page everywhere if it wasn't for the deluge of so much other stuff.
Well, and Andrew, as well, too, I saw Ro Khanna coming up on this, and, you know, I don't want to belabor the point too much, but it's he was talking about, oh, this is, you know, this is going to affect the visa holders who are currently here, because that would mean their kids don't get to become it would affect legal immigrant visa holders. And I'm like, wait a minute. A visa holder is not an immigrant by definition. A visa is temporary. All visas are temporary. So that means you're a visitor. When I want to go visit certain countries, you need a visa. That's how that works. So you get a visa, you go, you conduct business, whatever it is, you're a visitor there. If I, like, for example, I lived in China for 2 years. I was there on a visa, right? If I wasn't married to Tanya at the time, but if I was and we had kids, they wouldn't automatically become Chinese citizens.
Of course not.
And
of course not.
Because we were on a visa. And by the way, even if we were there under other circumstances, it's a really hard process. So the idea that someone who's here on a temporary basis, either as a worker or a student or what, or just a tourism, like this birth tourism crap that goes on, it's ridiculous. It's always been ridiculous. There's never been a country that's been more silly about its immigration status than the United States. And look, I get a lot of this goes back to the idea of birthright citizenship it goes back to the New World, because early on, and Blake, I'm sure you can attest to this, that it was that North and South America were colonies, and so they needed to attract, you know,
exactly.
Attract
colonists. It was a colonialist
so
scheme.
The idea was they wanted more people to come over. So as a way of attraction, as a potential boon or benefit to you, is to say, hey, by the way, when you come here, your kids will automatically be citizens. They won't have to go through that process. That makes sense if we're still a brand new country, not full of people. So it's perfectly obvious to anyone that if you want to update that framework for a new situation, of course you can do so. And oh, by the way, the U.S. Congress and the U.S. government certainly is well within their rights to do so.
So check this out. France, New Zealand, and Australia have all abandoned birthright citizenship in the past few decades. Ireland was
and
the
Australia
last.
Australia was another colony.
Yes. Ireland was the last country in the European Union to follow it. But they even abolished birthright citizenship in 2005. It's a completely dumb idea. Like, in our current context, to your point, maybe it had some value as they were looking to colonize the Western Hemisphere. At this point, it is completely and utterly idiotic. And you're just incentivizing all the wrong things. So, but again, I haven't seen too many stories about it, to be honest. I mean, I'm looking at it now, and people are certainly writing about it. But if you look at nightly news, if you look at all the thought pieces, it's not really the center of attention, which is truly remarkable. I guess, Blake, do you think you mentioned LBJ, the reversal of LBJ's affirmative action executive order? What would be your next? What's next on your list?
Oh man, after the after the LBJ one, that one's just so big. That one can be so, will be so monumental if they really follow up on it. Because it's not just the one, it's repealing an executive order. So they basically can't, it's going to be very hard for the left to try to reverse this. But and then they follow it up with, by the way, actually, we're going to start going after you if you have all these programs that treat people differently based on race. Actually, that's illegal, and it's always been illegal. And it's been such a big revolution on the right to, you know, come out and publicly say this is the case. We all owe a big debt to Chris Caldwell. His book about 6 years ago, The Age of Entitlement, was, as far as I can remember, the first book to really just come out loudly and say that. And it's swept the right since then. After that one, my personal favorite, honestly, just like genuinely, the level of aggression on immigration, both in the interior and at the border, where they say, okay, it's an emergency. We're getting rid of the CBP One Act. We're going to say you can send them back without a hearing if you get caught coming into the U.S. And I'm hearing chatter. Charlie probably knows more than I do, but I'm hearing chatter like there's more coming. They're very serious about building the infrastructure to fix the immigration crisis, because you have all these like hacks and lunatics in the press who will say, oh, just deporting people is impossible. So you see little things like the military says, oh, we're willing to have military planes assist in deportation flights. And when you see them, they surprise fired the people at the top of like the immigration, like our immigration court apparatus. That shows how serious they are. They are cleaning house, because if you really dig into the details, America's immigration enforcement system was a sham. The Biden administration had created this giant legal sham whose purpose is to disguise waving everyone into the United States who wanted to come here. It was all dressed up. We're like, okay, well, they come across the border and, oh, but we need to give them an asylum hearing. We don't want to take away due process. So we have to do an asylum hearing. Well, okay, but we have a backlog, so we have to give them a court date in the asylum courts. But it's going to be a while from now. It might be 6 months. It might be a year. It might be 6 years. You know, that's just how it is. We got to give them due process. And then you let them into the U.S. The court hearing date comes around. What if they don't show up? Oh, well, we've ordered ICE to only focus on finding dangerous criminals. So we're not going to prioritize finding those people who blow off their asylum hearings. It's all a joke. It was all a sham. So Trump comes in and he says, all right, sham's over. You don't get your asylum hearing if we catch you crossing here illegally. Got to go to the port of entry. Deal with it. And we're going to replace the guy at the top of the immigration courts. We're going to hire new people at the immigration courts. We're going to clear the backlog. And we're going to say that ICE can go find people, arrest people. There's multiple orders going into this, but it's the sheer aggression of saying all those things you supposedly can't do. Yeah, we're doing it. And I look forward to one of these things we're going to hear. The left is all going to say, well, we can't let, you know, these countries aren't going to take their illegal immigrants back. Well, I think we can get pretty creative on that front. I have some friends who are going to be going in that field. And I'm telling them, well, guys, good news. Most of the world borders a body of water. So we can go and we can drop them in a little dinghy with a rowboat and tell them to go back to their country. I'm really looking forward to this. I think the administration is serious. Stephen Miller knows what he wants to do. It's awesome. That all collectively is my second favorite thing.
I just want to give Stephen Miller like a slow clap, like every new, you know what I mean? It's like this man was born for such a time as this. And, you know, by the way, this is a point that Charlie actually made on Twitter. He and I talked about it. It was, you know, this idea that everybody has given a lot of attention to Trump being stronger, tougher, you know, more focused than he was in the first term, right? Trump 1.0 is not Trump 2.0. Just look at the pictures.
Well, the
right?
meme is it's the punished Trump.
But he's also knows the system. He knows DC.
Right.
He understands how everything works. He knows who he can trust, who he doesn't, who he can't trust. He knows
who
got in his way
last night.
What's that?
You saw it in his interview last
night. Oh, 100%.
They put me through hell.
Yeah, they did. But what we're not appreciating enough is the fact that guys like, you know, James Blair, Sergio Gore, J.D. Vance, these young guns, Stephen Miller, also was steeped in the same experiences, lived through it alongside him, saw what they did, saw how corrupt and depraved and aggressive they were with President Trump. All of these guys, this new generation, this new crop is ready to get to work. They're not afraid to use power. They're going for it. Rules, customs, norms, legacy, regime, media, be damned. We're going to get the job done. Now, the Constitution still matters. Obviously, we all love the Constitution, so you have to work within the framework. But some of these things are just simply a lack of creativity and a lack of courage, and that's not going to be getting in the way any longer.
With the stock market at record highs, are you confident your portfolio can weather the next big downturn? Market corrections are quick and unforgiving, wiping out hard-earned gains in an instant. Smart investors know the key to financial security is diversification. That's why Noble Gold Investments makes it easy for Americans to help hedge market volatility and diversify their investments with gold. Since 2010, central banks have steadily increased their gold reserves, and in 2024, gold prices soared over 25%. Gold is simple. You buy it, you own it, you control it. Over $2 billion in precious metal sales, Noble Gold Investments has helped thousands of investors diversify their portfolios with gold IRAs and physical gold. And now, when you open a qualified account, Noble Gold will gift you 5-ounce silver America the Beautiful coins as a thank you. Don't wait for the next downturn to catch you off guard. Visit NobleGoldInvestments.com today and see how easy it is to incorporate gold into your investment strategy. That is NobleGoldInvestments.com, NobleGoldInvestments.com.
I just got a word from Philadelphia. I'm going to be digging into this bigger, but possible breaking news. Word that ICE is conducting raids in Kensington, Philadelphia. Kensington is that area where you see the fentanyl zombies going around and forth. And so your biggest fentanyl dealers in the city, of course, many of whom have cartel ties, are going to be servicing that. And so that's exactly where they go because they know where all the fentanyl zombies are. And yeah, just got word from someone that's down in Philly that, and again, it's you know, caveat, but yeah, something that
I mean, I wouldn't be surprised down there. I wouldn't be surprised.
Make a lot of sense.
Yeah, I mean, I think they have a definite strategy of going to blue cities where the local municipalities have made the decision that they're going to be sanctuaries. They're not going to aid or help. Which, can we just take a step back and ask ourselves how insane that is? If you know the whereabouts of a criminal, you know the misdeeds that this criminal has done, and yet you refuse to remove said criminal from your streets simply because he or she is a illegal immigrant. The amount of insanity, I think, you know, Charlie said it earlier on the show this morning, but it was like they hate Trump so much that they've fallen in love with MS-13. They hate Trump so much that they've fallen in love with the criminal. They hate Trump so much that they have fallen in love with murderers and rapists more so than their love for their common man and their fellow citizen. That is an extraordinary psychological picture to take in and fully absorb. And when you get to these ICE raids in these cities, and the fact that these cities are harboring fugitives of the law and they are protecting them from accountability, when they rape little girls, when they kill people, when they stab people, when they get them addicted to fentanyl and other drugs that are going to kill them, the extraordinary dereliction of duty is almost unfathomable. It's difficult to comprehend what that would mean.
Charlie, we just got it's rumor status, but this is thought crime, so why not? We got a rumor that ICE is up in Kensington, Philadelphia tonight.
Oh, really?
Yeah, where all the fentanyl zombies are. I mean, just going after all the dealers down there. I mean, the merchants of death.
Let's do one of our reads, and then if there's nothing else, we'll end with the CCP.
I'm interested in hearing about the CCP.
I want to play that meme with Tom Homan, but yeah.
All right. Are you tired of getting a surprise when you see your cloud services bill every month? Well, our friends at Rumble have done it again. The new Rumble cloud services are coming this spring. Rumble has built the cloud for the parallel economy. The disruptive Rumble cloud pricing model will blow away the big tech clouds with big savings and more predictable budgeting. And like Rumble Video, you don't have to worry about cancellation on Rumble Cloud. Remember what happened to Parler? Exclusively for friends of Rumble, sign up today at friends.rumble.cloud and receive 30% off the first three months of your cloud compute subscription, which will then be available for purchase later this quarter.
Rumble Cloud services are the essential cloud services you need for any size business to innovate and grow. Head to friends.rumble.cloud and sign up today. That is friends.rumble.cloud and sign up today. Okay, meme time, and then yeah. CCP.
Yeah, let's go ahead. And so this is a big story today. It was actually from Bill Malusian. He went into Boston. He was embedded exclusively. Good for him. Great journalist. With the ICE raids that were going on in Boston, he gets this Haitian guy who shouts out, "I'm never going back to Haiti. You know, F Trump, Joe Biden forever, bro. Please thank Obama for everything he did for me." I mean, pretty stark stuff, so much to the point that Blake didn't believe it was real. It's real. And then Tom Homan was asked, what do you make of this guy's comments? And it's already been memeified, which is just – I just think it's so fantastic. When you capture the vibe of a moment, you just got to play it. 168.
I'm not going back to Haiti.
Well, you're wrong. He's going back to Haiti.
Come on. I'm not going back to Haiti.
Well, you're wrong. He's going back to Haiti.
It really was, folks.
I still can't believe that it literally was like what you'd have from a propaganda video. The guy's like, "I'm not going back to Haiti. F Trump. I love Biden. I love Obama for what they did to me." And he's like scowling and looking terrifying. It's like you couldn't have made the ad better. Like, unbelievable.
It's a walking billboard for the new
just
incoming
Trump. It sets the perfect tone.
Yeah, and by the way, just so we're clear, Trump, everything he's doing, the sense of and by the way, we haven't even talked about $600 billion from the Saudi prince, you know, crown prince. We haven't talked about the $500 million.
Well, we'll see what strings are attached to that.
Well, maybe, but I mean, Trump's today. He's talking to the WF, and he's going, "I'm going to have him round up to a trillion." You know, these and you've got the SoftBank investment. You've got Chrysler bringing jobs back. Yeah, I mean, all of these things. I mean, you know, Maria Bartiromo was reporting from Davos, and she was saying like all these guys want to throw money at America. The amount of optimism is insane, and Trump is acting as the salesman, the agent of his country, and that him playing that role is so unique. I mean, we've never seen a chief executive of the country act like that.
Yeah, I mean, you kind of want Trump to sort of just be the cheerleader for America.
Yeah.
And then, like, what's great about a J.D. Vance is that he can sort of hunker down, do the day-to-day stuff, go around the department. I would love to see J.D. Vance, like, showing up.
Oh, he'll be making site visits.
You know, making site visits.
Cheney, I mean, basically embedded himself in the DOD,
yeah,
right?
Cheney is famous for this. So why not? It's kind of like in the Navy, we would have, you know, the COXO kind of relationship where the XO is the executive officer of the ship, and his job is like, you know, make sure the ship's running properly, make sure all the departments are functioning. And then the CO, his job is, where's the ship going? What's the mission? What, you know, are we clearly defining the mission? Does the mission make sense? That's the CO's job. And then the XO, that's J.D. Vance. Mm-hmm. So J.D. Vance is – I want him to be making these – and by the way, not just here in D.C., but all around the country. Yes.
Okay, let's end with CCP.
Let's do it.
Okay, so the inauguration day begins with a service at St. John's Episcopal Church, which was the VVIP ticket, very difficult to get to. In fact, in order to get in the rotunda as a guest, you had to start – in the St. John's Church. So only those that were in St. John's Church actually ended up getting tickets into the rotunda. Joe Rogan was there. Everyone was there. So we had a lot of time to burn. The president was a little bit late.
Church that Antifa tried to burn down.
Correct. Right outside of the White House. And so kind of going around, and next thing you know, I run into the vice president of China.
As you do.
Yeah, just normal.
Can I just say, your life for the last while has been super weird.
Rather remarkable. It's like, and so I was like, I got to get a picture, right? So I go up. That's my picture with the vice president of China.
Wait,
nice
have you
guy.
Tweeted this?
No.
Oh, gosh.
Not yet. This is exclusive thought crime stuff here.
There we go.
He saved it.
This,
I wanted to tweet
JD
it.
JD did post his.
Yeah, so I should probably post mine, right?
Wasn't there something where JD didn't release it, but it was actually like a Chinese outlet released it or something?
I have no idea. So I don't know what this guy's name is. He was really nice. And so as soon as I get a picture of him, some guy with a camera, it's kind of one of those, it's like a stick with a camera. Do you know what I'm talking about? Like a little stick, as if you're looking.
Like a selfie stick.
Yeah, but it's like some sort of a technology I haven't seen. Okay. Meaning it's like a stick, but it has like a mobile camera that kind of goes like this.
Oh, I know what you're talking about. Like brain fart. I know what you're talking about. Yeah, it's got so like a GoPro one.
So he goes up. He's like, "What's your name? What's your name?" I said, "My name's Jack Posobiec."
Okay? It's Hanjong.
And so,
great.
No, I said, "My name's Charlie Kirk." And then I said, "Whatever." So then we go sit down. And if you've ever been in St. John's Episcopal Church, it's very tight, very close quarters. And I'm not saying anything private because everyone saw what was happening here. And so up on the kind, there's like this upper ring where you look down on the service. There's the one of the CCP handlers is like filming the whole crowd.
Yeah.
He's filming everybody during the service.
So they can use facial recognition.
So like one of these things? Like where it's got the little
thing. But no, so he's filming it. So here's the Secret Service who's like, you can't bring water into the church.
Right.
And there's a Chinese Communist Party agent government officials like filming everybody. And so all of a sudden some of the White House staff is like, they're starting to point up here. And he's like, going down there. They are so brazen.
Charlie, you know what else?
About espionage.
It's a three-axis stabilization camera where it kind of like...
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
like, so you know what else wouldn't surprise
listening
me?
To our conversations.
You know what else wouldn't surprise me is if they had some type of signal collector on them as well, so that if as the Vice President Hanjong, if he was going around someone, if he had a signal collector on him, then what they could do is time the video up with the signal collector. So when Charlie Kirk walks up, then boom, did you have your cell phone on you?
Yeah.
Was your cell phone on?
Yeah.
Well, there you go. So then boom, that signal, that number.
Well, I'm changing my phone tonight.
That number pops up in the signal collector.
By the way.
And he can say, oh, this number must be associated with this person.
So here's the thing. My phone has been like
not that I would know anything about
fire that. Since no, I've been in the city.
I think this is why, though. I think it's because they're dragnetting my phone.
Well,
I'm telling you.
Well, you and I both.
I'm not joking, by the way. That's like low level spy game stuff.
But anyway, what I found so amazing is that no one's told this guy to stop until like 20 minutes in, and he's using a little gimbal scanning the whole audience. Like he's over the balcony. Imagine like you're sitting down here. I'm over the balcony. And by the way, this is not like a schlepping audience. You had Scott Bessent. You had Mark Zuckerberg. You had the CEO of TikTok. Mm-hmm. You had Jeff Bezos. You had Sam Altman.
Don't forget
you had
Jeff Bezos.
Sundar Pichai. What?
I said, don't forget Jeff Bezos' significant other. I don't know.
They were all in church, right?
And her daughters.
So they're all in church. And he is scanning every single one of them from the balcony doing signal collecting God knows
what. Yeah, because the problem with the signal collector like that is when you go into a crowd, you're going to get all the signals, but they're not going to be associated with individuals, and that's why you need to pair it with the video so you can determine Charlie Kirk walks by and then boom, we collected the signal.
You have to remember
walks by and then boom, we got the signal.
You have to remember this was happening while Joe Biden was still president, and we should never forget this. We should just never forget how Joe Biden was the worst freaking president ever. This is a true headline. I'm reading it verbatim from Politico. This happened in 2022. DOJ shuts down China-focused anti-espionage program. The China initiative is being cast aside largely because of perceptions that it unfairly painted U.S. residents of Chinese origin as disloyal. They stopped doing China counter-espionage because they were worried it was racist, that their China counter-espionage focused too much on people from China. They hated America.
And then somebody at the pre-ceremony for the presidential inauguration, hours before Trump runs the government, is brazenly spying on every incoming cabinet member. And then finally, about 10 minutes in, someone goes up to him and taps him on the shoulder and says, stop it. Knock it off. And everyone in the White House staff, to their credit, was like, what's going on up there? Like, people were pointing, and they don't care. They just, like this, scanning conversations. The whole thing.
And for all I know, you know, they've probably got AI loaded on there. They've probably got facial recognition. They could have something where they could even have something where depending on the fidelity. I mean, you talk about Hanjong. This guy's the vice president of China. Oh, funny enough, I actually met him like almost 20 years ago when he was the mayor of Shanghai. And because he happened to be the mayor when I lived there. And the they could have collections on there with high enough fidelity that they were picking up every conversation in the room at the same time, and then break using AI to isolate voices and break it out so that they could later go back and listen to every single individual private conversation.
Well, by the way, the most common camera, right, that with a gimbal, I guess is what it's called, is DJI. Which is
the Chinese.
Yeah, which, by the way, we were contracting at both federal and state governments, like a lot of them. And they, I think during the first Trump administration, they flagged it as like a potential spyware.
Do you believe all this that I'm saying, Jack? This is very believable to you, right?
I would be surprised if they weren't, to be honest.
What amazed me, and it was such a microcosm of the failure of Biden, because that was Biden's government. Trump had no power at that time. It's just like the indifference. Like no one who is currently on government was like, yeah, they're just.
Meanwhile, Charlie Kirk's going like, hey.
Not only that, like, by the way, Sergio's turning around. He's like, what the hell's going on here?
Yeah.
Like, everyone's like this and that and like pointing, like at least 10 people are noticing that the Chinese delegation is using some sort of Chinese listening device scanning. It wasn't just that he was like over the balcony like this.
Yeah.
It wasn't being subtle.
No, there was no subtlety.
Yeah.
So that's my CCP story. And I met the JD Vance of China.
The JD Vance of China. It's fair enough. It's a good description.
He was,
by the way, how did I do in my picture? I think I passed the line test, right?
No, it's hilarious, by the way. You're just like straight up. You're like, I can just imagine your thought process in that moment. Like, don't be too friendly.
Yeah, exactly. Like,
you know. Yeah, this guy, I mean, this guy, so to give you a little background on him, so having been he was the mayor of Shanghai when. But the mayor in China is not the highest position in the city. The
it's
highest
like a province or city,
the highest,
right?
Well, Shanghai is kind of provincial level, correct? Which is correct. So, Beijing is similar. So, but that's not the highest ranking official in an area, because whoever's highest ranking is always going to be your party secretary. So the party secretary is always going to outrank whoever the official mayor is. And the party secretary of Shanghai, when this guy was the mayor, was a guy by the name of Xi Jinping. So this guy and Xi Jinping go way, way, way back. He was instrumental in getting Xi Jinping picked to the Politburo all the way back in 2012 when he ascended up and to the presidency, quote unquote, chairmanship when he came up. So he's been along with him. Well, so this is one of his most trusted
even
guys.
The fact that Trump chose to invite President Xi and then he sent his vice president was fairly remarkable and newsworthy.
It's not really done. No, it's not something that's really done. Foreign leaders I don't think I've ever come to a presidential inauguration before. It's something, and it's funny too, because Trump clearly it's just free money that's just sitting on the table, and he just goes and picks it up, because obviously in the back of his head he's remembering King Charles's coronation ceremony, which was only a couple of months ago, and all the world leaders went to that. So why wouldn't they come to his inauguration ceremony? It just makes sense.
Well, it's also, I think, an acknowledgement of the, you know, the dynamic that has existed with China. When Trump first started tariffing China in the first administration, they are the big geopolitical foe. And so it's a power move to say, hey, listen, like, I'm going to be really tough on you, but hey, you know, we can get along.
Yeah, it's actually funny, because Trump is extremely popular within China.
Is he?
Oh, yeah. Like, the Chinese people love him. They can't get enough of him. They just – there's like – if you go on the Chinese version of TikTok, you'll find all sorts of people doing like impersonations of Trump and using Trump impersonations in ads. And they think he's great.
Well, I think Trump is experiencing a boon in popularity, not only domestically but internationally. I mean, Raheem Kassam, mutual friend, says that in London now you'll see – tons of MAGA hats.
The Wall Street Journal famous Raheem Kassam, by the way. You see that piece on his new club this morning?
I did. Yeah.
Have you guys been by yet?
Butterworths. Yeah, I was there this week, yes.
Yeah. It's a Charlie.
I may or may not be there tomorrow. We'll see.
You got to go, what man. Raheem's new club downtown. No. It's right on Capitol Hill. Had huge profile in the Wall Street Journal this morning.
Well, everybody, I will tell you, one of the most common questions I've gotten from journalists is, where's the new haunt? Where's the new hang? Because in Trump 1.0, it was Trump.
Waldorf has still had some people going there.
Oh, okay.
But no, I don't really know the new place. It used to be Trump Hotel. That was like,
yeah, I mean, that was.
It's Butterworths.
Well, it depends. There's different cliques, right? I think that's certainly one of them. Anyways.
All right, guys. Thank you for watching Thought Crime. God bless you guys. And make sure you stay free of CCP spying. Thanks so much for listening, everybody. Email us, as always, freedom@charliekirk.com. Thanks so much for listening, and God bless.
For more on many of these stories and news you can trust, go to charliekirk.com.